On Tech News Today, suddenly there's a new nook in town. Or is it an old Samsung Galaxy Tab? Plus, Twitter rolls out its own right-to-be-forgotten policy, and Snapchat is working on self-destructing news, self-destructing TV clips, and self-destructing ads. All that and more coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 20th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. And by lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/TNT. That's Lynda, LYNDA.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin, and with me, as always, is Jason Howell.
Almost always.
Almost always.
I try.
Often. Often. When you're not there, it's a very quiet show. The screen is generally black, and it's just not as exciting.
Maybe quiet from a visual perspective, but I tend to not say a lot on this show because we always have a lot of amazing guests that do the talking for me.
Well, so. I slipped a truth serum into your coffee, so you'll be talking today.
All right, we'll try. Now,
I caught the first part of All About Android, your show yesterday, and that is such a great show.
Oh, thanks.
Can you... We don't plug that show enough. Can you give it a quick plug, tell people when and where and why and who?
Why? Because Android is kind of a force in the mobile industry right now. But All About Android, we record live every Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's myself, Gina Trapani, and Ron Richards. And we always try and bring in kind of a guest from the Android, both the Android press world, you know, people covering Android, as well as developers. Last night we had a pretty top-level developer, Chris Lacey, who does Link Bubble and a bunch of other things. A lot of people follow his work. So it's good to bring in Android folks and get their perspective on all the news and introduce a few new apps, all that kind of stuff. It's twit.tv/AAA.
And Android, of course, is only the most widely used operating system in the history of mankind.
Something so. Like that, or at least one of them.
No, it's the clear runaway winner. Now, Jason, I don't know if you watch the show Halt and Catch Fire.
Yes, I've seen it. I haven't caught up to date, though. But yeah. I actually really like what I've seen. I've seen a few episodes so far.
I liked it at first as well. And as I ground through the season one, I started to dislike it.
Oh, okay.
It just seemed just like they were drumming up drama because they really desperately needed some drama. And it's really, I mean, let's face it, a startup or any sort of... computer engineering company that's reverse engineering a laptop or whatever. The drama is mostly a bunch of nerds sitting around typing. Maybe somebody got fired or laid off or whatever, but they really right. drummed it up. And I couldn't help but feel like they know that they've only got half a season left of Mad Men. And so they said, we need another Mad Men. So let's find a period piece where there's a lot of office drama and people have really messed up personal lives. And I know, instead of the 60s and advertising, let's do the 80s and the computer industry. And it just seems kind of formulaic. And I was surprised, therefore, to learn today that it's been renewed for a second season. And I think some other people were surprised as well. But like you said, it started out great. And you think, well, this is a great start for a show. Shows tend to get better. This one got worse.
Oh, well, then the fact that I'm like two or three episodes in, that doesn't give me much hope. But I will say, as far as Halt and Catch Fire was concerned, that's kind of how I felt too watching it, right? Like, I'm a big fan of Mad Men, and I really like the drama. And I have to rate it myself on how engaged I can be watching it at a low volume, because my kids are always in bed when I watch these kinds of shows. And I will say, with Halt and Catch Fire, watching it at a low volume kind of made me a little tired. Even the action that's within, or the dialogue or anything like that, it wasn't enough to engage me in the same way that something like Mad Men would be. So I'm kind of not surprised to hear you say that, but I still want to keep watching it just to stay current.
It made you want to halt and catch some sleep.
Yeah, catch some Z's. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's the same effect to me. Well, you got another season of some solid shut-eye coming, so
all right,
you heard it here first. Well, let's jump into the news. Samsung and Barnes & Noble this morning unveiled a new Android tablet called the Samsung Galaxy Tab 4 Nook. costs $179, and you can buy it at Barnes & Noble stores. You can also buy it online. John Biggs is the East Coast editor for TechCrunch and joins us now to talk about this new device. Welcome, John Biggs.
Howdy, howdy.
Glad you're here. Now, isn't this just a rebranded version of the Samsung Galaxy Tab 4 7.0? What's different about the Nook?
Don't tell anybody that. They don't want to hear that.
It's my little secret.
Oh, boy. This is basically kind of Barnes & Noble throwing in the towel in terms of major hardware. They're still doing their e-ink stuff, but this is essentially them saying, we're going to sell these third-party tablets. They're going to have Nook on them. It's slightly improved over the Nook app that you're going to get, that you download on your iPad or your regular Android tablet. And that's what it does. It's basically just a book reader. There's a little button at the bottom now that just you press it and you can read a book faster. That's the major improvement.
Now, clearly, this is an attempt to compete against the online book juggernaut Amazon, which makes its own Fire devices. Got two whole lines of ebook reader / tablets, and they've got a lot more than that. They've got their own Silk browser, where they harvest personal data and use that algorithmically behind the scenes to serve up contextual advertising. They've got steeply discounted tablets. They've got a lot more downloadable content. They are way ahead of Barnes & Noble. Why even bother coming out with a rebranded Samsung at this point? It doesn't seem to me like it's going to help them compete against Amazon.
No, absolutely not. I think what this is their way of allowing their customers, who may or may not be as tech savvy as maybe some of the Amazon customers, you can just come into the store, you get things fixed, you get things repaired. They'll set up your Twitter for you, they'll set up your Facebook, sort of a support deal as opposed to an actual content deal. This would be similar to, I don't know, Barnes and Best Buy offering a special Samsung edition phone that. Best Buy will support and maintain and fix for you and do all sorts of good stuff. And hopefully that will draw in some folks who might not want to support their own tablet. Obviously, Kindle and Amazon already have their Made-i service, which you just press a button and somebody helps you on your device, which is a massive step forward. This is sort of a minor step forward, I guess you could say, for Barnes & Noble, and it really spells sort of the death knell for the actual Nook hardware.
It is a good deal for certain types of people. For example, if people know that they're going to be downloading content like books, magazines, TV shows, and so on, they were planning to pay for it on some sort of device. This actually comes with $200 worth of free content, and that includes best-selling books, electronic magazines, TV shows, and all the rest. And of course, with the device costing $179 and you get $200 free content, it's actually, you come out ahead, theoretically.
If you really wanted all of that particular content,
yeah, exactly.
Right? If you were going to drop money on that content, then yes, you come out ahead. If not, then it's just kind of like, okay.
For sure. Both of those people. Now, Jason, as a Android tablet, what do you think of this? Is this a contender for people who just want another tablet that's mainly for reading and for downloading this kind of, getting this kind of downloadable content? Or is this just not even something worth considering?
I think it's certainly a contender in the sense that the Nook itself maybe had a little bit less brand recognition. Samsung are, arguably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, Android device manufacturers right now. So having the Samsung name attached to it automatically raises it a few bars. And $179 is not a bad price for a tablet that has access to all the Google services. You see the Google Play services kind of in there. At least I see the little bubble that has the Google folder in it, with their apps. So that tells me that it's Google Play services qualified, and you're going to get all of those services. So, it doesn't look like a bad tablet at first blush. I haven't dived into the exact specs, but I imagine they're probably, pretty, mid-range at $179. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing, though. In this case, it's all about price, right? And it's $179 for what, happens to be probably a pretty decent e-reader and also, full tablet functionality by Samsung. That's a pretty good deal, I think.
It's a pretty good deal, and I think what they need more than anything else is mindshare. I mean, I've talked to a number of people about the Nook and about Barnes & Noble and asked them, do you know that Barnes & Noble has downloadable TV shows? And every single one of them said, no, I had no idea that they even offered that. So they've got a long way to go before they penetrate the consumer market. They've got a long way to go before they really break into anywhere near the stratosphere where Amazon dwells. Now, John Biggs, one last question. Do you think that there's a phone in the future? Are they going to come out and compete with the Amazon Fire Phone, again, probably with a partnership with Samsung, or are they going to leave it at the Reader?
I think they're going to leave it at the Reader. They really don't have that sort of retail. There's no value in having a phone that can do all sorts, all the retail tricks that Amazon's Fire Phone can, where you can just swipe it over something and purchase it instantly. That's the that's Amazon's secret sauce, and Barnes & Noble just doesn't have it anymore. They sell books, and sometimes I guess they sell toys now. I don't know what they sell in Barnes & Noble stores anymore, but they definitely don't have the range and the value, and there's no reason to have a phone in this case.
One thing they are selling is the buildings where they used to have bookstores, and that's sort of a sign of the times, I guess, and hopefully they'll come up with a better strategy to compete with Amazon, and you know, because competition is always good. John Biggs writes at TechCrunch.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at John Biggs. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
Thanks a lot.
All right, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about a very serious story involving Twitter and a new policy that they are talking about. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Now, I have to admit that in the last 5 or 10 years, I've been increasingly persuaded by beauty, by good-looking things. I tend to buy things and be overly persuaded, and I think a lot of people are, by how things look. And if you have a website, if you have a blog, you have a business that you are online that you want to sell things for, I think that you would be well advised to have an absolutely beautiful website. It's actually a super easy way to be better than your competition. And Squarespace, one of our sponsors today, will help you do that. And you can do it very easily with Squarespace. They have all kinds of templates that you can start with and choose as the basic starting point for your blog or your website. And they have branded names like Aviator, Front Row, and Pacific. These templates just look fantastic, and they look like they're designed by incredibly good designers, because, in fact, they have been designed by incredibly good designers, and you can take advantage of that design. Now, you're not going to have a website that looks like everybody else's website because you're starting with these templates. You start with the templates, and you can modify anything. You can modify anything to an extreme degree, completely change the typeface, completely change the colors, completely change the images, change the shape of everything, add your own pages. You can make it completely unrecognizable. Or you can go in there and make subtle tweaks and gentle changes to the existing design to have a unique site that's also retains as much as possible of the original beautiful site. I've been using Squarespace for a long time. I always tell people about it because it's so fun and easy to use. And if you're a blogger, of course, and you want to switch over from your existing blog, it's super easy to do. Just use their content importer tool to import from WordPress, Blogger, Tumblr, all the major blogging sites, and that'll retain all the work that you've done on those other sites, but refresh it, and you can do a new launch with a redesigned page, and your readers will be super thrilled. Squarespace is also, very importantly, mobile-friendly. Everything's going to mobile these days. So if your website doesn't look great on a mobile device, on a tablet or a phone, then you've got a problem on your hands, because that's how people are looking at your site. Squarespace makes great-looking mobile web pages automatically. They just, all they have to do is go, your readers or your visitors to your site, just go to the site with a phone, with a tablet, and it just redesigns itself on the fly for those devices, and it looks perfect and native on mobile devices. It sounds expensive, but Squarespace starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Squarespace also takes care of the hosting, of course, and they are famous for their super solid and reliable hosting. So here's what we'd like you to do. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required, and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT to get 10% off, and we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Well, American journalist James Foley was killed in Iraq yesterday. The execution was recorded on video by Foley's ISIS captors, and the video was posted online. ISIS, which stands for Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, is a terrorist group that claims to have established a caliphate or Islamic state, and which also asserts the claim of religious authority over all Muslims in the world. Twitter yesterday began suspending the Twitter accounts of any user who posted the video. In addition, Twitter announced that anyone could request the removal of pictures or videos of family members who are now dead, and that the company would comply if certain conditions are met. Dan Lamoth is a national security writer for The Washington Post and joins us now by telephone to talk about this story. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Now, is Twitter's policy a blow to ISIS, which was probably relying on Twitter and other social media to spread this message of terrorism?
I think Twitter is trying to respond to the sensitivity issues on the subject. I mean, the very graphic images that were being shared and really continue to be shared. I mean, the problem becomes it's very hard to police this. As soon as one wave of images and videos are taken down, other accounts will put those same images back up. I mean, my own notifications have been flooded with this in the last 24 hours as I've been writing on the subject.
You've been writing on the subject, and you've also been avoiding the super horrible imagery that's been associated with this, and especially, of course, the video. But I'm trying to get at what exactly is behind the policy of actually removing the accounts, suspending the accounts of Twitter users who post this video. Are they concerned about essentially participating in the spreading of terror? Are they concerned about the sensitivities of users who might be super upset or offended by these images? Are they just simply responding to complaints from their users? Or are they responding to pressure from the government or from the Pentagon? Do you have any sense of where this decision is coming from?
I mean, their stated policy is that in order to respect the wishes of loved ones, they remove imagery of deceased individuals if certain circumstances occur. With that said, they put up the disclaimer that given newsworthiness and various other things, that they may not strike all images. Without getting into specifics of, an individual incident. I think they're trying to not alienate users. I think they're also concerned with, being construed as, potentially spreading propaganda, but that they really haven't gotten into motivation beyond, trying to be respectful, really.
Now, of course, Twitter has been used by terrorists for spreading all kinds of violent imagery for a long time. It's been used by users to show really graphic, horrible images of warfare. And it wasn't until an American victim was depicted in a video that they suspended that. Is that, do you think, the result of the fact that they are an American company, they have a lot of American users who may be very vocal? Or is this just a sort of part of the evolution of Twitter where they're also responding to the recent trolling of the daughter of Robin Williams, for example, where they said that they were going to change their policy about, people being awful on Twitter. Where do you think this is coming from? I mean, is this really the result of the fact that the victim was American, do you think?
I mean, I think it's perhaps a little more complicated than that. The Islamic State, or ISIS, as some people would call it, have continued, I mean, really going back to the very beginning of this year, have been very active on Twitter, very threatening on Twitter, that they've showed, photographs of old American soldiers being killed or, after dying. So, I mean, it's not really new that they're sharing images of dead Americans. I think in this case, you hit a situation where it was not only occurring, but that it was so timely and so raw that they reacted to assumedly some complaints they received, and that they say in their policy that if you email privacy@twitter.com, that that they will review these things.
Well, let me ask you one last question, and I ask this to you as a journalist. Twitter's policy said that they'll consider multiple factors when deciding whether to remove a video or suspend accounts because of something people posted. And one of the major factors is newsworthiness. Is it newsworthy, in your opinion? Is this video news? Is it newsworthy content or is it not?
I mean, I think it's newsworthy. I think where Twitter runs into problem is all of their preview functions. And, depending on which images you pull from that video, it gets very graphic, and they're not things that everyone's going to want to view. So, I mean, if you had a disclaimer, perhaps, but if you're basically anyone who happens to bump into these images by accident is, kind of thrust in their face, I mean, I think that's a problem they need to address.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was kind of following this, obviously, as everybody was yesterday on the social networks, and I hadn't yet logged into Facebook. And then an old colleague of mine, Carolyn McCarthy, warned on Twitter, or at least took Facebook, obviously a different social network in this case, but to kind of shamed Facebook for their policy of auto-playing videos in your stream, right? Because now, in their stream, if you go there and there's a video embedded, it will automatically play the video without sound. Well, of course, Caroline McCarthy went to Facebook and just scanned through the stream. And what do you know? Somebody had posted the video, and whether she wanted to or not, she saw, you know, she saw that video. So obviously Twitter isn't alone here. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of the onus lies on social networks to also be aware that, you know, it has those intentions, you know, their best intentions don't necessarily play out when a situation like this happens. It kept me away from Facebook entirely yesterday for the most part, because I didn't even want to risk it. I don't even want to see the video, and I didn't want to take that chance. So,
Dan, I also had an interesting experience with this story, which is that I posted a breaking news item. I go out of technology when news is really, really major, which I consider this to be very major. I didn't post the video, and I wouldn't post a video like that, but I posted a link to all the other coverage on Google Plus on this story, and some of those links contained either links to the video or the video itself. I put a graph, you know, warning label on it and so on. But I got some, you know, most of the comments were engaging constructively in the news and the information. A small number of people were offended that I would even post such a thing, even mention the news. And so that's another thing that people have to, there's a disagreement about whether or not you're kind of supporting terrorism by reporting news. And my view is that you have to report the news. We're citizens in a democracy. And, you know, people should have the choice to read about horrible things, even if that originates as terrorism. And so that was just my own perspective. I also want to point out one more thing, which is that today at 1 p.m. Pacific, this week in Google, I'm going to be on the show today. And Jeff Jarvis and Leo and I and Gina, I believe, is on the show. She's one of the hosts, and I hope she's on. We're going to be talking about something that, in Jeff Jarvis's perspective, these are all connected. So, and I agree with him completely about this. So this issue of suspending Twitter accounts because they posted this video, the issue of the troll problem on Twitter involving Robin Williams, but also involving people in general, including involving Jeff Jarvis, and the issue of the right to be forgotten. I mean, Jeff Jarvis is posted this morning on Twitter that this is kind of like Twitter's own right to be forgotten policy, where they're taking requests from the public. Now, just a reminder for those of you who don't recall this story, the right to be forgotten is a European Union initiative that basically requires all search engines, including Google, to have a process for accepting requests from European citizens asking that their name not be used as a search query to return certain types of content. And now Google and Microsoft and Yahoo and these other search engine companies have to judge and weigh the request to decide whether they're valid, whether they're newsworthy, et cetera. It's a big mess, and we've talked about it a lot on the show. Jeff Jarvis has talked a lot about this on Twig, and we're going to be talking about it today on Twig. And all these things are connected. It's all kind of related to the sort of the sugarcoating or sanitization of what we see online. And it's a controversial issue. And if you really care about this issue, I recommend that everybody tune in at 1 p.m. Pacific today on This Week in Google. Dan Lamothe writes at thewashingtonpost.com. And also you can find him on dlamothe.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at Dan Lamothe. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dan Lamothe.
Thanks for your time.
The Wall Street Journal reported an exclusive last night that Snapchat plans to expand beyond self-destructing messages and into the realm of self-destructing TV shows, self-destructing movie clips, self-destructing news articles, and self-destructing advertising. I like that last one. Doug McMillan is a tech reporter for The Wall Street Journal and joins us now. Welcome, Doug.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So glad you're here. Now, you reported that Snapchat has been meeting with advertisers and media companies to talk about something called Snapchat Discovery. What is Snapchat Discovery?
So this is something that they've been developing over the past few weeks in conversations with advertisers and publishers, as you said. And this looks to be kind of the first move that Snapchat is making towards monetization. The CEO and co-founder, Evan Spiegel, has talked, kind of alluded to perhaps pursuing virtual goods model, like a Tencent, or perhaps doing some kind of advertising product to monetize Snapchat. But this is kind of them pushing into the world of being more of a media company. And when you think about that, it makes sense because there's a lot of kind of latent advertiser demand for Snapchat's audience. They have millions of users who currently are very active and engaged in the app, and kind of most importantly are a demographic that advertisers are very eager to reach. They're mostly teenagers and college students. So advertisers are really excited about potentially getting their message in front of people on Snapchat. Snapchat's really eager to make money, so I think that this could be kind of a good idea for them.
I couldn't help but believe that this is really brilliant, because I love it when a site comes out with a certain hook. Of course, Snapchat became famous for self-destructing messages. Originally, it was associated with teen sexting, consequence-free, because the messages self-destruct, or at least we thought they did initially. And here they are monetizing in a way that's very Snapchatty. I mean, essentially, as I understand it, the proposition here is that people can share clips and content as a sampler, and it goes away. It's not like people downloading illegal or copied material from BitTorrent or whatever. This is a little sampler, like you go to the store and they give you a sample of some food or something. You try it and you're like, oh, I'm going to buy some. It's really kind of brilliant. I really like the idea. And of course, people love sharing short clips of things. They love sharing little articles. People are already doing these kinds of sharing. And here you have Snapchat essentially jumping on that and using their core competency to monetize in a way that makes perfect sense for their user base. Now, unfortunately, we just lost a connection with Doug McMillan. So I think what we're going to do is, unless we can get him back right away.
I'll keep trying. Yeah, no luck so far.
Okay. So let me just give a couple of quick facts. And if we can't get him back, we'll go ahead and move on. But so Snapchat Discovery is set to debut in November, according to the Wall Street Journal's sources, Doug McMillan's sources. And so we can look for that. Also contributing to this story, this is a scoop by the Wall Street Journal, was Gillian Tan and Jack Marshall. So I wanted to credit them as well. And so I guess we've lost contact with
Doug. We got him back.
Okay, Doug, thank you so much. We lost you there. Hopefully your sources can also figure out what the heck is wrong with Skype, because sometimes it just doesn't work. So I just wanted to quickly... Yeah, I just wanted to quickly congratulate you on this exclusive, and also get any final thoughts about this in terms of your opinion about whether or not this is going to do it for Snapchat in terms of monetization and becoming profitable.
Well, the valuation that Snapchat's been talking about with investors is many billions. They talked to Alibaba recently about an investment that would perhaps value Snapchat at more than $10 billion. And for a company with no revenue at all so far, a lot of people would think that that's outrageous. So for them to kind of start laying the groundwork right now to at least prove to their investors and prove to the general public that this is more than just kind of a silly app, and this is more than just, a popular game for college students, but that it's potentially, a media company. It's potentially something that can be a platform for advertisers and a platform for TV networks and newspapers and magazines to send their content across the internet is an important step for them. So it'd be a step towards them starting to prove that this is a multi-billion-dollar business, if not a $10 billion business.
Doug McMillan writes at WSJ.com. That's the Wall Street Journal's website, and you can follow him on Twitter at DMAC1. Thank you so much for joining us today, Doug McMillan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, in just a minute, we're going to give you some follow-ups on some major stories that we've been covering this week. But first, I want to tell you about Lynda.com, one of our new sponsors for Tech News Today. And it was brilliant of them to sponsor this show, because I'm in constant contact with Tech News Today viewers and listeners. And if one thing is clear, it's that you guys, Tech News Today audience, are really into knowing everything, really into learning, and being very expert at what you do. So many of the people I've talked to, I've been so impressed by how expert they are and how successful they are in their careers. And Lynda.com is one way for everybody to become more successful, not only in their careers, but also in their personal passions. So lynda.com, of course, is an easy and affordable way to learn. It's just a constant education, and it's very, very affordable. For only one low monthly price of $25, you get not one class or three classes or 10 classes. You get unlimited access to more than 100,000 video tutorials. And these aren't just the kind of video that you may be used to on YouTube. These are professionally developed videos created by professionals showing experts giving you expert instruction and expert curriculum on a really wide variety of topics, from business to technology. And of course, there's real certification here. You can, whether you're beginner or advanced, you can find courses at all experience levels. And of course, they will even give you a certificate of course completion, which you can publish electronically or do whatever you like with it because you've earned it. This is a fantastic service, and I really enjoy it. I've been taking a class most recently on photography. I've been taking pictures, I think, since I was in high school. And I've always kind of figured out how to do things my own way. And finally, thanks to lynda.com, I'm learning how to do things the way that the really good people do it, the way that the experts do it. I've been following photographers like Trey Radcliffe and others on Google Plus and just marveling at what they're able to do with a camera. And now I'm finally learning how to do some of those things as well. And it's really, really, really fun. I'm not going to bother personally with the certification on the camera thing. I just want to take really great pictures, and I'm learning how to do that. And so remember that for any software you rely on, lynda.com can help you stay current with all of the software updates as well and learn the ins and outs to be more efficient and productive. So again, if you want to succeed in your career, you got to use lynda.com. We've got a special offer for everybody listening, and you can access all the courses free for 7 days. Try it for a week and see how you like it, and I guarantee you're going to like it. Visit lynda.com, that's lynda.com/TNT, to try lynda.com free for 7 days. And remember that Lynda is spelled lynda.com/TNT. Well, we've got some quick follow-ups for you. We told you this week about the personal data theft of some 4.5 million patients of Hospital Group Community Health Systems. Now we've learned that the attack was made possible by, dun-dun-dun, the Heartbleed bug, which is a major vulnerability in the popular OpenSSL cryptographic software library. We told you about it. We reported on it when this story was hitting. But this is the first known large-scale attack that uses the Heartbleed flaw. Also, when we reported yesterday's announcement of the new HTC One M8 for Windows, the company had claimed that the phone was exclusive to Verizon Wireless. Today, we're learning that AT&T will support the phone as well. So if you're on AT&T and want to try this phone, you're in luck.
That exclusivity lasted a day.
Almost a day. We also told you this week about Twitter's experiment with adding unremovable tweets to users' timelines from people they don't follow. We talked about what a terrible idea it was, and we said we hoped they wouldn't make it a real feature for everybody. Well, now they have. We've also been telling you about Microsoft's Steve Ballmer leaving the CEO position some months ago. Yesterday, Ballmer announced that he's leaving the board of directors as well, a spot that he's held since January of 2000. In a letter posted on the Microsoft site, Ballmer said he wanted to spend more time with his family. Just kidding. He wants to spend more time with his basketball team.
His new
family. Los Angeles,
yeah.
Clippers, exactly. He didn't mention his family. Well, in other news.
Clippy the Clippers.
That's right. In other news, Sony, they need somebody to take care of them, I can tell you. In other news, Sony is planning to release a new CyberShot camera. Let's take a look at this, Jason.
In China, that kind of camera.
Yeah, it looks like a perfume bottle. Not much else is known about this camera other than it will be optimized for taking selfies and that it will be unveiled in China on Friday and that Jason Howell will be first in line to get this
camera. Don't
worry,
I'll have this in my man purse at school.
It's not a man purse, it's European.
So, wait a minute. So, it's a camera that looks like a perfume bottle? That's its thing?
Yes.
Why? I don't understand. Why? I don't get it.
Actually, the reason is that in China, among a lot of people, primarily women, there's a big trend to use smartphone cases that look like perfume bottles. So people look like they're waving around a perfume bottle, but in fact, it's a smartphone with a case. It's a fad, I guess, in China.
Oh, okay.
And so I guess Sony is seizing upon this fad. And, you know, this is one of those things where... I don't know. It's something doesn't translate here.
Yeah, geographical divide of some sort here.
Yeah, so I want the pink one.
It's as if they're ashamed to be waving around their phone to take a picture.
That's right.
But it makes sense for a perfume bottle to take a picture.
Yeah, yeah.
This is nothing to be shameful.
I think that they should just, you know, the cost of electronics is getting so cheap. I think they just should build camera electronics into actual perfume bottles, and the problem would be solved.
There we go.
You heard it here first, and hopefully, you know, hey, Kickstarter. Jason and I are going to go into business together.
Somebody will make a couple $100 off that.
Sure.
No problem. Yeah, it's not going to be us. Well, our TNT fan of the day is North Lily in the state of Ohio, who posted this picture on Google Plus. Look at that. Wow, that is incredible. That is a lot. That's a lot of computers going on right there. One, two,
wait
three.
Wait a minute, where are we?
Four. Oh, we're in the middle.
We're, there we are. Yeah.
I would have hoped for a bigger screen there, but that is quite a desk.
Although I'd be very impressed if they could get TNT on that little phone monitor.
Yeah.
So hack that together, and then we'll be super impressed.
That's right. And, of course, North is extremely tan all the time from the radiation of all those monitors. So, you know, indoor tanning, what are you going to do? So how do you watch or listen to TNT? Just take a picture of your setup, post it on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook with the hashtag How Do You Watch TNT, and we will find it. You can also search for the hashtag yourself. That's How Do You Watch TNT. You can see them all for yourself. You don't have to wait for us to dribble them out. Of course, we're getting new ones every day, but it's really interesting to see how people are watching and listening to Tech News Today. And that is the Tech News Today. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS. So many options. Choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. That's our Twitter name. And follow Twit's breaking news feed, Twit News. Subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and send us your thoughts anytime you like. Just email to tnt@twit.tv or leave voicemail 260-TNT-SHOW. Don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.